Becky Simpson is Spoonface Steinberg.
In the olden days, when you wrote the songs and the operas and that, it mattered how you died. When the singers singed and went about, and they sang like beautiful birds, and they fell over and everything. And she was all quavery and beautiful, and everyone holded their breath. And there she was, in the special lights with her boobs and everything. And everyone would be looking, and they would cry, and in their hearts they would weep for the poor lady, the poor, poor lady who dies so well. And if I could ever grow up, I would be one of them sad singers and do the dying, and everybody would clap and cheer. And in all of the singing, when people heard it, they would have a little piece of beauty, which is very important, to have a little piece of beauty what's in the music. And this is what I realised. Even though the beautiful singing is sad, it is still happy in a way. The saddest things fill you up, like in a big way, and you feel so full, as in no happiness can bring such, and all such sadness is beautiful as the singing, as beautiful as the dying, and it would make a meaning. And I would sing the dying, and people would love me, and I would sing the dying, and out come the angels to take me away, and I would sing the dying, and there would be a lovely piece of beauty in the world. I would sing her dying and be as free as a little bird floating up to heaven. Never heard such sing before, except for when Dr. Bernstein brought the tapes. Even though the other children like such music as Take That and That, even one little girl has this tape of Take That, and Take That's into this picture, and they are all blowing her a kiss, and all she ever does is play the music. And she can't even hear because she's in a coma. And then Take That made her a tape which said, "Hello, this is Robbie." And she still wasn't better. And I said this was no surprise on account of the tape. But I play the proper music, as it is so sad and it is about the dying. And it makes me so clear. I was never right since I was born. This means that I do very bad writing, and that I can't speak proper, and that I'm backwards, and that I am a special child. But why is a mystery, for what they have not got an answer. But Mam said, when I was born it was at a dark night, and it was raining and thundery, and all the cats and dogs and things were under the tables, and the wind was screeching round everywhere, and everything was quite horrible. But I didn't mind, because I was just little, and I was in a hospital. And Mam kissed me, and when she looked at my face, she noticed that it was round. And everyone came and looked at my face, and they laughed and said I was spoon face, because when they looked at my face, it was round as a spoon. And when you look into a spoon, you see this face just like mine. And that is how I came to be Spoonface Steinberg, because my other name is Steinberg. But I never even knew, because I was just a little baby, and all the stars and planets were moving inside of me, and I was looking up, and the world was as bright as colours, and as shimmery as light, and I was just a baby. And when you're a baby, you have a soft head and that, and that's what makes you backwards. Sometimes, when it's very late at night, when you think I'm asleep, Mam says to Dad that maybe it is his fault that I'm not right. On the fact that on the day Dad came back when he was out with the floozy, I did fall off the chair. Dad came back, and it was quite late for our tea, and I was sitting on the chair, and Mam said that Dad was out with someone, and Dad says he was in the office doing the meeting, and Mam said she phoned the meeting, and he was off with the office doing a floozy, and that this was one of his students, and she was going somewhere, off with the final straw. Then there was all this crying and screaming, and Dad went like a beetroot, and Mam said that the student was just a baby and a big boobs, and I fell over. It was like when you bump your head, only worse. And then everything went white, like lightning. And this was bad on account of my softness. And they were crying there with me, and I was silent as a worm. And Dad told Mam he would not ever have another floozy if Mam would be nicer. And Mam said she would be nicer, and then it was that everything was all right. Except I started going backwards. But I'm not sure if this is to do with it or not. Maybe it is. Maybe it is not. I think I was backwards before the fall, before Dad came back and everything. I think I was always backwards, ever since I was born, and it was all the thunder and that, and I think ever since I was born that my brain was quite special. I think I have a special brain, what is quite different in how it was and stuff. But nobody knows for sure. All the experts with all their computers and all the doctors who poke in your ear and look into your brain and all the people who do the quizzes and all questionnaires and such like, none of them know for certain. They all said, no one can ever know for certain. And that's what Dad says. He says there is only one thing for certain. Nobody knows anything for certain. What is true, I think, on account that he is a lecturer of philosophy. The thing is, even now I'm old, I cannot read proper or to write, and I'm very bad at games, and that I cannot go to a proper school, as I am not allowed on account of my brain. But I am quite a special little girl, though. That's what Mrs. Spud says. Mrs. Spud does the cleaning. And she says that I am quite one of the special girls she has ever known. And every time she comes, she brings me a sweetie, which is very nice, for she has so many problems of her own. She says that everybody is different, and that it is quite good indeed, and that we should all be happy in that, for every person is a very special person, and that it is good to be different. As if there was no difference, we would all be the same. And Mrs. Spud told me not to worry about my brain, because to be different is to be who you are. So, I do not believe that I fell on my head. I do not believe that I was affected. Or it was Dad's fault for the floozy, or Mam's fault because I was unattended. I believe that I was supposed to be backward. I believe it was all part of what is supposed to be. And when I was born, God came and touched me on my head. Down he came and touched my soft spot and made me, me. One day, I started to do the numbers. This was when Dad came back from the university and he was with a calculator for doing the marks. He was sat doing the marks when he said two numbers and I went, 42, because it was the answer of the two numbers. And then he goes, goodness me. And then he said two more numbers and I said 147, which was another answer. And then he did more and more. And some of the answers he had to do on the calculator. And then he started shouting at Mam. And Mam came running as if there was something bad. But it was only me doing the numbers. And I did more and more. And Mam kissed me and was crying and that. And Dad kept doing more and more. And he was laughing. And Mam said he had to stop. And I said, what was it that had made her cry? And she said that it was because of the numbers. And never in the world did they know I could do the numbers. But I could do them now. And I was a genius. and it was of my brain. And then I had to do them in front of a doctor. And then the doctor said, if Spoonface can do numbers, then she can do dates. And then I did some. This is how I do it. What is the day of July the 4th, 2010? Saturday. Amazing. Absolutely amazing. And that is how I do the dates. And they have to look it up in a book as soon as I've said the answer. And there it is. And they say, how do I know so many numbers? And I say, I don't know. And how do I know so many dates? And I also say, I don't know. But it's just obvious, like colours. And that is why. And Mrs. Spud says that is why we are all different. To me, the numbers are obvious. And to her, some other stuff is obvious, like how to clean the loo and that. But at least that means we are all different. So, this is all because I'm autistic. And that is quite a big strain on Mum and Dad, which was on account of why they did split up. For a start, Mum was quite sad. She was in the house when Dad went to work, and she did look at her books and such like, and she was getting a PhD also like Dad. Only he finished quicker, on account of women have to have babies that men can't have. This meant that hers was much slower. And she would sit in the room, and whenever she was just to do some work, I came in, and then she had to stop. And it wasn't fair of me to do the PhD, and Dad was on the committees, so Mum had to drink the vodka. And she used to sit with the book and the vodka, and Dad came back, and she said that he was not of attention. Maybe he wasn't. Then one day, Dad said he had met one person who was doing a different PhD to Mum, and that she was very nice, and that he would go away to live with her for a bit. And Mum said she was glad of him to go, and even though I was backwards in that, it would be better than his stupid face. And off Dad went for a bit, until sometimes he came back for a few minutes on a Saturday. Then Mum used to have more and more. And she would come to me and say, my poor sweet angel, my poor sweet angel, and then drink the vodka. And then she had to take tablets off the doctor and would stop the vodka at the same time. Except one time she had the pills and the vodka and went to sleep on the stair. And I put on her a nice blanket in case anyone tripped. But nobody did trip, as there was only me. Then the next day, Mrs. Spud came and tidied up where she'd been sick.
Alfredo in strano suolo. Il vostro sacrificio io stesso gli ho svelato. Egli a voi tornerà per suo perdono.
When I first started feeling funny, that is when I still had hair. It was hardly noticeable at first. That was, there was hardly nothing wrong, except I was tired a bit. But then Mum was very worried that I was thinner and thinner, and one day I might fade away to a speck, and that I was looking peaky. But because I'm backwards, then I wasn't very good at saying what is wrong. So she took me straight to the doctor in case I'd disappeared. And the doctor looked at me like this. And he said, oh dearie me, Spoonface will have to go straight to the hospital. Which is where I went. It was all right, as I had been before to do the numbers. They were all very nice to me, and the doctors held onto my hand and stuff, and they all smiled, which means something is wrong. Then Mum looked greyish, and they said they were going to have to put me in a tube, which was quite horrible, as I'm only little. I did not wish to go into the tube, but they said I would have to, on account of being so thin. And inside the tube, they would find out what it was. So I went in the tube, and Mum was watching when I went in and waved bye-bye. And then all these computers went off and stuff. And they did all this dialing and whirring. And then there was some rays or something. And I was in there like it was a space machine. But it never went anywhere except in the hospital, even though it took ages. And I waited, and all the computers were doing different numbers, and all the information was going everywhere and that. And then it came time for me to come out. And when I came out, there was Mum and the doctor waiting, and they said hello, and I was allowed out. The doctor said he would have to check the switches, and that we should all go into a room where Mum could cry and I could play with Lego. When I was in the room, I got a drink of pop, and Mum said it was unexpected that we would go straight to the hospital and go into a tube. Then the doctor came back and said that he had got an answer off the machines, and the answer was that I was going to die. Looked very sad and said the doctors must have wonky computers and that they needed to put me in a tube again. But then they said how the computers were only new and that they were very expensive and it was definite what they said. And it was that I was still going to die. Only they said there was hope. That there was always hope. And anyway, it would take a long time for me to die. So I went home for some tea. When we went home in the car, there was rain and wind and everything, and we passed this accident where a man on a motorbike had got his head smashed off. And Mum said that even if I was supposed to die, there would still be hope, because there were millions of people that were saved by God every day, even if the poor man was smashed on the road. And so it was better not to be too worried about it. So I said I wasn't worried, and we had fish fingers. Then Mum had to phone Dad. He was with the graduate in a little flat and everything. And Mum rang and the graduate answered and said that she would still like to meet Mum as there were no hard feelings, but Mum said she had to speak to Dad quick. Normally, she used to shout at him saying, "What did I do? What did I do?" But this time, she said to the graduate to get right off as she needed to talk to Dad immediately. Then on came Dad, and Mum said there was something terrible wrong with Spoonface, and that she'd been in a tube and had been playing with the Lego, and they said she was going to die and he must come at once. And then she put the phone down. And Dad came and said this was the last thing he expected, especially as we had so many troubles. And he kissed me, and he also kissed Mum and said, "What such troubles we had. First, I wasn't born right, and that even though I did numbers, I wasn't very good at games and stuff, and then he went off with a graduate too young for him and stuff, and Mum was living here with only me, and now I was going to die." Mum said she was sorry, and that deep down she really loved Dad, and Dad was sorry that he really loved Mum. And they all loved me over and over. I was supposed to be asleep by now, but I could hear them, and of everything they said, it was so terrible for everyone, and this was the change of everything. And then they came in at the door and looked at me in the dark where I was supposed to be asleep. And I was lying in my beautiful bed, all the covers up, and he would stare like this at me and have their arms holding each other, and he whispered that I was a poor little soul, but They never knew I was wide awake, and I could see them through the crack in my eyes not to scare them. And when I looked at them, and I saw that they were crying, and then Dad said, there I was, fast asleep, not a care in the world. But this was ridiculous, because I was there awake all the time. Came back to see us quite a bit. Some nights he used to stay in Mum's bed and everything, and he would see me in the morning. And the PhD said that she had a new boyfriend, who was quite young and played in a musical group, and that Dad was quite old to be living at her house, and Dad was to live all alone, except when he came to see us. And when he came, he was nicer than ever. And Mum was quite happy sometimes. But she would cry at night when I couldn't hear who she was. I kept going to the hospital and they would do all these checks on me and go, oh, well, it is very bad indeed. Mum would be worried and tell me to be brave. Then one day they said, Spoonface is going to die, except we might put her in this machine and she would get some rays and stuff and then she would be better. But I couldn't go in straight away on account of the list, so I waited a few days and stuff. And Dad came round every night and that, and he said that Mum was to go out to see her friend and he would stay and watch me. But he never, because he was downstairs and he found Mum's vodka. I was feeling quite sickly. And I was all wobbly because I was thin as a stick, so I went straight to bed. Then I was asleep. Then there was this noise, and in came Dad, and he smelled really weird, and he came right up to my nose, like he's flying over my nose, which was horrible. And his eyes were sort of fat and soft. And he had one of the glasses from downstairs and the vodka what Mum kept in the freezer. And he took this huge gulp and went pink. I just looked at him like this, wishing Mum was back. Then he grabbed my arm and it was quite hard. He did grab me tight like this. And I looked up and was frightened of what he would do. And then I thought I was going to faint the pressure. And he started rocking backwards, like this. And then he said, I had suffered the worst out of anyone in the world, and it was all his fault. That he didn't know what he was doing. That he was such a young man, and he was just a poor philosophy man, because he couldn't think of what else to do. And that he loved Mum, even though when he had such a young baby as myself, it was before things were settled. But then he said that he loved me, and he didn't know what he was doing, except for that he was sorry for it all, and especially sorry for his whole life. But then I was Spoonface, from his own sperm, and that I was the most loved child in the whole world. And even if I never understood a word, I was still the most loved child in all the world. And he went like this for ages. And all of a sudden, he stopped doing his grip and fell backwards and plopped onto the floor. I wanted to go to the loo, but I didn't ask in case he tried to grab me again. And I saw he was sitting back like this on the floor. And his face was bright red, and he sort of shook. He was shaking, and he did these gasps like he couldn't breathe. And no tears would come from his crying, just these shakes. Then heard the door. And Mam came up the stairs in her coat. And she saw Dad on the floor doing the shaking, and she just left him, and picked me out of bed, and put me between her bosoms. And she pressed me there for a long time and kissed the tip of my head. After that, she took me to her room. She said that Dad was overwhelmed and that he was reading of Kierkegaard, which was too bad for him. And the next day, I was in Mam's bed and Dad was in mine. And she said that not to worry about Dad, that he was very sorry for him gripping me so hard. And it was all because of the vodka. And he promised he would never shake again. I love the beautiful women who do the operas, and how they sing, and they flutter their voices like this. Because it is the saddest things are the best things of all. And that is because God made all the sad things for to make us human. And this is what Dr. Bernstein said at the hospital when I went in. He was quite old and stuff, and he said that I was very brave, and I should be very brave, because when his mum was little, she was very brave as well, even though she was in a concentration camp. Concentration camps were these places where they took Jewish people to burn. This is what the doctor said. He said that there were loads of people and they all had to sleep on one bunk and that. And the Nazis shot them and then they starved them. And it was horrible for his poor mam because she was just little. In the whole history of the world, there has never been anything as awful as the concentration camps. But what happened to the poor people there was to show that they never gave up hope. And that never mind the worst thing that could happen to people, they could not stop them from being human beings. Some of the little children were skinnier than I am now with the cancer. And all that was wrong with them was that they didn't eat. Just this soup. What didn't have any vegetables in it. And they'd just be standing there, and their mammies and daddies would be bashed. Like there was one little girl who was with her mam, and the soldier came and hit her mam in the head and shot her. And then she died. And the poor little girl just had to stand there. That little girl was the mam of the doctor. And there were millions and millions of people like this. So in comparison to me, it is much worse. And I felt sorry for the doctor when he told me these things, as he had a little cry in the corner of his eye. And he never said any of this to scare me. He said all of this to help me. Because the whole lesson of the stories was that little children were braver than everybody else. And all the little children all played games in the middle of mud. In the middle of the concentration camp they played. And this was the human spirit. In the middle, where their mams and dads were getting gassed. And they could kill their mams and stuff. But they couldn't kill what was in the minds of the children. This was the lesson. That no matter how bad it is for us while we are dying, it is still a wonderful thing that we are alive. This is what the doctor said. And he said, when the soldiers came and took the poor little children to the ovens, and the poor children and everything thought they were going for a wash, but everybody knew really they were going to get gassed because he had seen the smoke of burning bodies. Then the children were waiting outside, and all the little children wrote things on the walls. On the walls of the gas chamber, where they were about to be cooked. And some little children wrote poems, and some little children drew pictures. And even today, you can see the pictures of butterflies on the outside. Little butterflies that were flying up to God. Beautiful butterflies with tender wings that would brush their faces and kiss them better before they flew. Careful little butterflies. In all the death and the mud and everything. And that day, when he told me this, I cried for the butterflies and the little children and all our sad faces drifting up to heaven. And the doctor said that his grandma used to be a singer of the opera before she went to this place. And in them days, everyone loved the opera. Not like now, when everyone likes to take that. And when they would put the lights out, all the poor women on the bunks would think of their husbands who were never to be seen. And they would ask Grandma Bernstein to sing. And in the sad dark, she would sing. Sing to all the poor, skinny women. And she sang all the songs what she knew in the opera. And she sang for the poor people in the bunks. And all the poor people who had died. And she sang for the children of the people to come. And that was very important to everyone, to have such songs to be sung. And then I would play the music. And in the heart of it, I could hear the singing of the poor grandma on her bunk. And the poor children who wrote their pictures on the wall. And even in the darkest place, there was someone with such a beautiful song to sing. By the time I had to go into the machine, I was quite upset that I was going to die. But then Mum told me not to be, because it would sap me. Then I would be all right. But I knew that maybe there was a chance that I would not be zapped proper. But I never said anything. So I went in and got zapped. I went in every day for 3 weeks. They said that was quite enough, as they didn't want to zap too much, as they might do a mischief. They gave me centigrades. These are special rays which get the cancer and make it better. They put me in the machine and then zapped the centigrades straight into me. And I felt so small, as if I was travelling all through the history of time to another place where all things were different. And in this place then, everybody was laughing and happy, and there was no more hospitals or concentration camps, and everybody had ice cream and watched the telly, and there was opera people and everything. And all of a sudden, I believed that maybe I had died in the zapper, and when I looked around that I was in heaven. But then I came out, and I had not died at all, and I was still in the hospital, and there was Mam and Dr. Bernstein. And I remembered this was the hospital, and there were concentration camps, and I was still going to die. And then everybody said how I was, and I said, quite well. And they said what a brave little girl I was in the zapper, and that I should have a special little present. And that it was a special CD player, what the nurses had bought me, because they knew I liked the opera. But I couldn't wear it inside the machine on account of the interference. After a few days, they told me the zapper was not really such a zapper at all. And in fact, it was called an accelerator, which means to go very fast. But it is for to slow the cancer down. And I sat for hours, but the cancer never slowed. In fact, the centigrade hardly stopped it at all. And they said I had to go home for a while. I started getting even worse than I was. Really woozy and everything. And virtually as soon as I got out of the hospital, they said I had to go back in. This time, they said there'd be no more machines and stuff, but they would give me this special thing in my arm, and that would make me sick and have diarrhea, and all my hair would fall out. This was the chemicals and such, and they said that if that didn't save me, that was that. So I went and had the diarrhea, and they put the thing in my arm, like a tap, which they had all bags and special machines, which had these chemicals that they put in my arm and made me ill. I was feeling quite sickly, and then I had to have this medicine to stop me puking up. It's quite hard to have the diarrhea and want to puke up at the same time, because you don't know which one to do first. And this was called a side effect, but it affected all over. And I would sit in the bed with the arm thing and my new CD, and then I would poo myself, and my hair all fell out, and I was quite weird. Then one day Dad came, and he had this hat for me to wear. It had a picture of these opera singers on the front, and I wore the hat even though I was inside. And every day I was sicker and sicker, and I goes to God, "Please, God, why are you making me so sickly?" And I never found out, because he never said. Then I was quite depressed, and my eyebrows fell out. Dr. Bernstein came to see how I was, and he said it must be horrible having diarrhea, but I said I didn't mind that much. And anyway, that's what Beethoven had when he wrote his music. He had diarrhoea and deafness, and he was quite ill a lot of the time. But he wrote the beautiful music, and a doctor said, "How did I know such things?" And I said, "Someone told me what looked at my tapes." Then Dr. Bernstein said that there was this man, Job, and he had a horrible time, except he put up with it, and he was all right. Dr. Bernstein said that Job was a Jew too. So was Jesus, and so was all these famous people. And yet there was a lot to suffer in the history of the world, which is true. One day, he came to me and took off the drip and said that the good news was that my hair would grow, but the bad news was I was still full of cancer and there was nothing to be done. All the chemicals and the centigrades and everything was useless. When I went home, I was in bed a lot, and I used to watch everything through the window, and I had lots of time to be by myself and think about things and that. First, when Mum brought me home, then Mum said that I was a brave little girl indeed because of my baldness and everything, and that my hair would be growing in soon. But then when there was Dad there and that, and he was allowed to stay on the sofa downstairs for every day that I was alive, then I was in bed, and then I would have the pills and stuff, which is called morphine. And I would be propped so I would look out of the window. Then she said that she did hate God, and how could he do such a thing to poor Spoonface who was in bed, which was me. Only I could hear and everything. And Dad said to her for to be philosophical. And Mam said that philosophical should just go away. And that she did hate God, as basically God is a bastard. This is what I heard. And then I looked up and saw the wind.
Thank you.
And when we went home, the doctor gave me this book to me. But I can't read, so I had to get Mum to read it to me. And then I found all this stuff out. Like I had to pray to God, and that this would help get on his good side. And even if you did die, then he'd look out for you afterwards. And in the book, it said that there was different ways you can pray. There's like when you get up and sit and say things. That's one way of praying. And then there is like you go to the synagogue and then everybody does it all together and that. And then there is this different way that was invented by these people in Poland quite a while ago. This is when everything you do is a prayer. And you have to do everything you do the best you can. Because it's not just normal. In fact, it's a prayer straight to God. When you smile, that is a prayer. When you talk, that's a prayer. When you walk, that's a prayer. When you brush your teeth and when you give someone a kiss, and mums and dads when they go to bed, that is a prayer. And when you pray, that is a prayer. And when you spit, when you suck, when you laugh, when you dance, when you snore, everything you do is a prayer. Especially what you do when you meet other people, because all the people in the world are in God's kingdom. And it doesn't even matter if they're Jewish. And all the animals, all the birds and bees and fishes and swans and llamas and piglets and worms and trees and buses and cars and people and that. Because when the world was made, God made it out of magic sparks. Everything that there is was all made of magic sparks. And all the magic sparks went into things, deep down, and everything has a spark. But it's quite a while ago since it was made, and now the sparks are deep down inside, and the whole point of being alive, the whole point of living, is to find the spark. And when you meet someone and say hello, or if you tell them a joke, or when you say that you love them, or try and help someone, or you see someone who is sad or injured, or maybe they've lost all their money or have been battered up, or maybe they're just a bit glum or hungry, or you ask the time, or maybe they've missed the train. All these people, all they need is help to find the spark. And the people what invented this, the Hasids, a long time ago, when he saw people that were having a chat, they saw the sparks jump in the space between them. The sparks were jumping like electricity. Sparks God put there. And the sparks were put there for each other. Because God wanted people to find them in each other. And doing this, making sparks, this was to pray. And the old people, a long time ago, they saw the sparks. And when people met, and the sparks jumped right up into the air from the place they were hiding, and they leapt up through the firmament and through the clouds and past the sun, and they shone over the whole universe. And when people kissed, there were sparks. And when people held each other, there were sparks. And when they waved as they were going away in a car, there would be sparks. And they would all be prayers. They would all be prayers for the babies and the sad people with cancer, and for the kings to be good, and the experts to be clever, and all the mums and dads and the cleaning ladies and the milkmen. And if only you could see the spark, then there was a meaning. Because what was the meaning of anything? If you were going to die, what was the meaning of all the trees and the bushes and the famines and wars and disasters and even pencils or pens? What was the meaning of all these things? And the meaning was, if you found the spark, then it would be like electricity, and you would glow like a light, and you would shine like the sparks, and that was the meaning. It wasn't like an answer or a number or any such. It was glowing. It was finding the sparks inside you and setting them free. This is what it said in this book, what the doctor gave me. The Dr. Watts man was the little girl whose mum got shot. And it meant that the meaning that everybody thought was somewhere else was right here. And all you had to do was do the sparks and become like a light bulb. And the meaning wasn't that I was going to die, but that I was still alive. And I could make everybody shine. The bus boys and the milkmen and Mrs. Spud. And I thought, if I wasn't scared of when I wasn't born, why would I be scared of when I wasn't existed at the other end? You can't feel the end or touch the end, because it was just nothing. The end of things is not the problem, because there was really no ends to find. That was the meaning. There are no real ends. Only middles. And even if I was at the end, I was still in the middle. Because it wouldn't know it was the end then. Because it would be ended. So everything is in the middle. Even if it was at the middle of an end, it didn't matter. Because I'm in it. And when I looked to my middle, and I saw underneath there was a belly and bones and muscles and veins and cancer and intestines. But in the middle of the middle was sparks. The sparks what would save me. The sparks what I could make shine. The sparks that knew there was no more endings. The sparks what would be as a huge light in the world. And the sparks would fly up and take me to heaven. During the day, Mrs. Spud comes in and sees me. She makes me stuff and that, and helps out Mum with the laundry and the cleaning. She makes the house spick and span and that. If I was to grow up, I would be like Mrs. Spud, and every day I would clean the fridge and the oven and the shelves and the steps out to the garden and some of the skirting boards. But I would leave the shelves when nobody looks, and everything would be clean. I asked Mrs. Spud where I got my cancer from, and she did not know. I said, I think I might have caught it off God. And she said, God does not have cancer as far as we know. I said, maybe he's just not telling anybody. Mrs. Spud says that if God's got cancer, we're all in trouble. I think maybe he has. Or he has not. She said she has a son, who is a little angel, and a husband who is dead. He had the cancer too, only his was of a difference. She did weep when she told me about him, and how when they were just children, they met, and he kissed her on the neck and that. And on those days that the sun shone forever, she said that the trouble is, when people are around, you forget that they're quite special, and when they're gone, it is too late to tell them, and you must always tell them. She said there was nobody like her husband, and that he was a very kind man to her. And when she spoke of him, you could tell, as her eyes were sparkly and her breath was warm. And although he was gone away, he was also here, and that every day they had a little chat. And how was the weather? And in heaven it never rained. And she said we would all be there in the same place one day. And maybe I'll get to meet him. I said I didn't know if I could go there on account of being Jewish. But she was sure I would. His name is Mr. Spud. Then I said that I quite liked the rain, when it was wet and it blew so grey on the ground, and I would watch from the bed when the trees would weep and bend in the day, and I saw how the shed wobbled in the wind, and I would see the cloud for all the silver there was in it. And every day of the rain, the sun, even in its little bits, made the world spark like diamonds and glisten in the weather. And if I was in heaven, there would be no dull to shine out in the sad days. But Mrs. Spud said she liked the sun, and when she could afford, she would go on a nice holiday in Ibiza. Although Jimmy, which is her son, would not go on account of the price, which is a shame. I asked her if she was lonely without poor Mr. Spud. She said a bit, and that she would lie and remember him whenever. But then again, we are not gone. Then I said, did she see that there was blackness? And she did not. She said there was sadness and stuff, but that's what there is. But if you look, there is also happiness, like little children having a smile, or someone with a birthday. And even in the graveyard there might be a little butterfly flying around the gravestones. And these are the things what is important. And poor Mr. Spud would be sad in heaven if he thought that Mrs. Spud didn't look at the day and see that in the trees and in the sky there was a little piece of heaven. I felt sad for Mrs. Spud, as she had three hungry mouths to feed, her and Jimmy and someone else. One day, she came to my room to do the hoovering, and I had pooed in my pants, and it was a disgusting smell, and she cleaned my bum and the bed for me. And I made her a card the next day, and it said, I love you, Mrs. Spud. And she cried. And she cried when she got it. She said, what a lovely card. And I said I did my best considering the crayons I had, which was not very many. There was no blue, so there was no proper sky. But she said it was quite a beautiful card for a cleaner. When you think about dying, it is very hard to do. It is to think about what is not, to think about everything, there is nothing, to not be and never to be again. It is even more than emptiness. If you think of emptiness, it is full of nothing, and death is more than this. Death is even less than nothing. When you think about that you will not be here for your breakfast, and that you will never see Mam or Dad or Mrs. Spud or the telly or hear the sweet singing opera ladies or feel anything anymore. But you won't feel sad, as there'll be nothing to feel of. And that is the weird point. Not that there is even anything, but there is not even nothing. And that is death. Sometimes it is scary, but to think that I will not be is impossible, because I'm here. When I'm not here, there'll still be cows and grass and vegetables and radios and telephone machines and cardiologists and soup tins and cookers and hats and shoes and Walkmans and tiny tears and synagogues and beaches and sunshine and walks in the rain and films and music and my coat and my shoes and cars and underpants and necklaces and my mum and dad and flowers. Everywhere there'll be something in the whole world. Everything will be full, except me. And there isn't even a hole somewhere where I used to be. And apart from people what remember me and what I was like, there is nothing missing from when I was here. There is no space in the universe where people have dropped out. It is all filled in as full as ever. There is nothing to know, as is everything that there is all around us. There is nothing to know because there it is. In the world, everything is divided. Everything divided, one from the other, one from the many, from the mother and from the father. There is day and night and black and white and all these things. But in the very beginning and in the end, everything will not be divided. And there'll be no me or you. There'll be no this or that, no little puppy dogs or anything. There'll only be that everything is the same, and every moment is forever. And it will shine, and it will be everything and nothing. And that is all there is to know. That all of us will end up being one. And that is nothing. And it is endless.
Blessed and lauded, glorified and lifted and exalted and enhanced and elevated, and praised be the name of the Holy One. Blessed be he, although he is high above all blessings, hymns and uplifts that can be voices in this world. May his name be blessed for ever and ever.
Spoonface Steinberg by Lee Hall. Spoonface was played by Becky Simpson and directed in Manchester by Kate Rowland.